It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Kevin Gavin, filling in for Paul Guggenheimer. On this Life of Learning special, we're focusing on averting improper fraternization between teachers or other staff and students. What are the legal requirements for school districts? Our guest now is Ira Weiss, solicitor for Pittsburgh Public Schools and a half dozen other school districts. Ira Weiss, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Ira, from a legal perspective, what, if anything, does the state, the Department of Education, require of any school district, whether it's Pittsburgh Public Schools or another public school district, when it comes to informing or training teachers and other staff to avoid that inappropriate contact?
Well, there are a number of things. First of all, the Child Protective Services law mandates that school districts provide training to its staff members on issues of what's called mandated reporting, that is, who must report instances of conduct under that law. The Professional Educator Discipline Law, which is part of the public school code, sets forth a number of requirements for professional employees. Those are teachers or any other employee who holds a professional certificate to receive training under that act, and also imposes obligations on the school district to report instances of conduct that may involve professional discipline.
You've been a solicitor for many years for various school districts. Have you noticed an increase in such cases of inappropriate fraternization, or is there just more publicity about the cases that we do learn about?
I think it's both. I think there are more cases, and more of these cases get reported because under the laws that I've just mentioned, there is mandated reporting.
The failure to report, is that strictly targeted at the individual, or could the school district as well get charged with failing to report because one of its personnel, one of its staff members, did not report?
It's an individual sanction, so that if the mandated reporter holds a certificate, there could be discipline related to that certificate. The institution itself is not subject to sanction. However, when you have cases where there is a systematic failure to report, inevitably that situation will fall ultimately to the board of directors to deal with.
Failure to report seems to be one of the possibilities in the ongoing Plum case.
I'm not familiar with the case directly. I only know what has been reported, but clearly there are allegations that there was a failure to report. The guiding principle in all these recent amendments,
which came as a result of the Sandusky scandal at
Penn State. A lot of this came as a result of the Sandusky case. The Child Protective Services law has been amended over a dozen times in the last 3 years to deal with these issues. And the companion piece to that, which is the clearance law in the school code, where you have to have pre-employment clearances, that has been ratcheted up very high to cover more people. It now covers volunteers, which it technically didn't used to cover. There's also an extensive employment background check where you actually have to contact prior employers and ask them certain questions. All of that is born of the belief that reporting and disclosure will at least prevent these offenders from going from one employer to the other.
How would you summarize the key points of Pittsburgh Public Schools policy regarding inappropriate relationships between teacher staff and students? And is it very much from other school districts that you've worked with?
The policies are fairly similar. They require that when you have knowledge of a relationship or a reasonable basis to suspect a relationship is going on, that you at first conduct at least a preliminary inquiry. But if you believe that there's a basis to proceed, then you are required to report it to the Department of Education. It's called a mandatory report. If it rises to a certain level, you are required to file what's called a child line report. That's a report to the statewide agency that receives and processes complaints of possible child abuse.
Could you give us an idea of what is delivered in terms of messages to teachers, to staff, sort of some do's and don'ts? And if so, how is that communicated to the teachers? Here's a pamphlet, or there is sort of, you know, you advise teachers or what have you.
All school districts have what's called in-service training. Staff is advised not to put themselves in situations where allegations of misconduct could arise. So the example you use is very appropriate. For example, we advise administrators when they are dealing with students or other employees of the Office of Gender that you have someone present. With a student, you have the same thing.
Does that gender issue even strictly apply anymore? Shouldn't there just be a third person no matter what the gender is?
Well, yes, but ideally you want to have right. a situation where the person in the room who is being interviewed wants to have a level of comfort with another person there. Every professional association that I'm aware of counsels their members regularly to not have personal relationships with students. The other large area that we now deal with are electronic communications with students. And that has been a big accelerant in the increase in these cases.
Specifically with the Pittsburgh Public Schools, our staff, our teachers told, do not give out your cell phone. Do not give out your Twitter account to any student. Or is that not mandatory that they're told that?
They're told that. At this point, it is not mandatory. However, because this is a difficult problem to control, school districts are developing policies that deal with employee conduct. Pennsylvania does not have, at this time, a state law which mandates school districts have policies regarding electronic communications. Many states do. And if they communicate with them via texting or email, it has to be on the district platform.
And are parents sort of copied into it as well as a safeguard?
The policy will be that parents must be copied, so they're aware of it. But as we've seen in many cases, the conduct of individuals that seek to enter into impermissible and illegal relationships with students are often quite deliberate about their effort. That is why, under the most recent amendment to the Child Protective Service Law, individuals covered by this law are students, even though they have turned 18. Because oftentimes what these predators do is work the subject until they're 18, and then under prior law, victim was not considered a child any longer, became an adult case, and if it was consensual, the law couldn't do a whole lot about it. Now, under the new law, even though the victim is 18, if they are a student and if that relationship existed, there is criminal sanction.
Ira Weiss is solicitor for the Pittsburgh Public Schools, as well as several other school districts. He's our guest on this Life of Learning special on Essential Pittsburgh regarding inappropriate relationships between teachers and staff and students. Ira, what is the district's or any district's legal responsibility, if you would, and if you even want to touch on moral or ethical responsibility to students and their parents concerning this issue so that the students are protected?
Well, the legal responsibility is a duty to report under both the school code and the Child Protective Services Law. There's also a requirement that in certain cases there be a direct referral to law enforcement. And the local law enforcement and the Allegheny County District Attorney's Office, Stephen Zappala, have a deep interest and a high priority on these cases. I believe there is a moral and ethical responsibility to do everything we can to protect these children. And we owe it to parents to do all that we can do to protect these children, because we know from cases around the country, it's a complex problem. But at least in the case of the laws we have, it's given the schools some tools to try to deal with these errant employees.
Conversely, what is the legal responsibility of a school district to its employees in the event of a false allegation?
The school district does have an obligation to at least preliminarily investigate the case. Now, it's clear now under the law that you have to report it and then do your investigation. That's why investigations are confidential, both in terms of public disclosure and meetings and so forth, and there's a specific exception under the right to know law that protects these reports from being released. Because there is a significant risk that an individual who is falsely accused will suffer career-long damage. So school districts have to be very slow to make final accusation, but they have to be very quick, if they detect it, to deal with it immediately.
Confidential, but do districts have to at least be transparent to the parents of the student about an incident, whether it's true or false?
We advise that parents be informed of the allegation.
During the process of investigation, though?
We seek their cooperation. Many times these cases are called to the school district's attention by parents. So we believe school districts should be partners with parents. We view the relationship as allies to try to protect their children.
You don't want to, just in case the allegation is false, that it is a confidential investigation. But what happens if it is accurate and other parents find out later, hold it, my child could have been abused? So is that kind of a tricky situation for a district?
It is. And I will also say that in high schools, where most of these relationships play out, if a student is having a relationship with a teacher, people know about it. If you talk to any educator that's been around for any length of time, particularly now in the era of social media, when you hear these cases of no one knew, most educators and most people in the business, so to speak, find that hard to believe.
People know about it, but does that, quote, people include mandated reporters? And if they know about it, aren't they failing to fulfill their responsibility?
Yes. If mandated reporters know about it, they have an obligation to report it. And my advice to educators in both the educator discipline law side, which is the Department of Ed side, and the Child Protective Service side, is when in doubt, report. Both of these laws have provisions that protect people from liability if the report turns out to be false. And we hope it's false, obviously. The trouble you get into is when you don't report it. So our advice is, when in doubt, report it. That's our policy. That's my office's policy. When we get information from a district, we either advise them to report it or we file the report with the department. And we have the district personnel, quote, child line, which means they call the child line number.
So you have a school district employee sort of on the same level of another employee, and this one employee is aware of what the other employee is doing inappropriately. But what happens if a mandated reporter, the abuser, shall we say, we'll just use that term in this case, is their supervisor, sort of above them in the structure?
The law addresses that. It used to be that under the prior law, before there were amendments, that the individual having the knowledge had to report it to a supervisor, and very often then there was doubt whether it actually was reported. So if the principal is involved in the relationship, the teacher does not have to go to the superintendent or to the assistant superintendent. The teacher reports it to the Department of Ed
directly to the state.
Or to the child line.
So has the Pittsburgh School District revisited, revised, tightened its policy in the wake of the cases, such as the alleged incidents at Plum, or has a lot of this happened, as you mentioned earlier, as a result of the many changes in state law as a result of the Sandusky scandal?
Well, certainly the public events will drive certain actions, because if you look at the policy and you see there may be a gap, you try to address that. The district has revised its policies each time the legislature has changed the requirements, both in terms of reporting and in terms of clearance requirements and things like that. And again, we are developing this social media electronic communications policy, which requires some nuancing because, you know, many educators believe they must communicate electronically with students today, and our response to that is you communicate through the district platform. So we've proposed and the board has adopted several revisions to policies to keep it up to date with the legal requirements.
Even with these changes, are we doing enough to protect our students?
Obviously, if there's any case that happens, you'd like to think you could do more. Practically speaking, I don't think you can eliminate all this from occurring. But what these policies do is, I think they create a culture. Because many times when you have repeated cases in a school, there's a strong indication that there's a cultural problem there, that this is tolerated. These policies send strong messages that the district's not going to tolerate this. You have to have a very low bar for reporting. People have to know that. They will pursue it.
Ira Weiss, thanks so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Ira Weiss is the solicitor for Pittsburgh Public Schools and several other school districts in the region. Coming up, teachers challenge engaging students to learn but not crossing the line.
There is a way to deal with it, you know, but you need to have a special training for the teachers, and we don't do that kind of special training.
We'll talk with retired high school teacher David Campbell. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.